You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
The Paranormal News Insider from ParanewsInsider.com. Produced by WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of March 14th, 2017, and episode number 306. And this is your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. Yes, March 14th. Why does that ring a bell? Oh, it's Pi Day. Pi Day. I don't know. I mean, how do you really celebrate that? Pi Day. It's not really about pies, apple pies. At my job, we had pies today. No, I was the one measuring them. This is the circumference. This is the diameter. Never mind. There is no way to have jokes about this. I mean, Pi Day is just a fake holiday. And it's created by math companies to sell more math. Okay, I'm going to stop while I'm ahead. Let's just get to the paranormal stuff, right? It's not a comedy show. Today is about yesterday, if that makes any sense. Yesterday was March 13th. And exactly 20 years ago yesterday, March 13th, 1997, for nearly 3 hours, a large triangular craft made its way through Arizona, and a group of lights were filmed by many people. Despite the technology of the time, and we're talking VHS camcorders, these big, suitcase type things. They were heavy. They were bulky. The Phoenix Lights, you remember that? They would go down in history as one of the most controversial and misunderstood mass UFO sightings in history. Tonight, we celebrate the 20-year anniversary of the Phoenix Lights story. I'll talk a little bit about them, a little bit of just the basic stuff, a little bit of input. It's weird, too, because I'm kind of researching it for a project that I'm working on. So got a lot of information from my research that I'll share tonight. I won't go overboard. But tonight's other information includes, besides the 20th anniversary of the Phoenix Lights incident, we're going to talk quantum theory. Yeah, we're going to get technical. And quantum theory proves consciousness lingers after death. It's true. Somebody said it. It's on the internet. And scientists elsewhere have also proved it. Wow. So we have scientists on top of scientists. Is it true, though? You'll find out. Scientists also say that crop circles are real and have hidden messages. And we'll also talk about those pesky mermaids that have taken more victims. I like mermaids, but they get a little annoying sometimes when they kill people. And we'll also have the book of the week and maybe a little bit more, I don't know, maybe some more math jokes. Okay, maybe not. Definitely not, I guess. Okay, this week's news is brought to you by Thomas Francis University. Thomas Francis University is a metaphysics school that offers online spiritually based bachelor's, master's, and PhD doctoral metaphysics degrees, as well as single standalone courses in related metaphysical and esoteric topics. Instructors are easily accessible and offer world-class customer service and instruction. TFU and other ICMH schools have hundreds of students and graduates in more than 50 countries worldwide. For more information on Thomas Francis University, visit tfuniversity.org. And TFU is one of the two educational outlets for Paranexus Anomalous Research Association, which I'm the executive director for. Yeah. So I pay my own bills. I'm going to do it somehow. So anomalous notes for the week. Yes, the events listing. I don't think I've added anything since last week. But if you haven't checked it out since last week, or since before last week, I guess, there's been a few updates. A few days ago, maybe about 9 or 10 days ago. I updated, added some stuff, moved some stuff around that I accidentally put on the wrong date. So you might want to check that out. And if you have any information about any event that's not listed, or maybe I screwed up again, let me know. Insider at paranewsinsider.com or go to paranewsinsider.com. There's a little contact page. That's what we do here in 2017. Or you can go to Facebook, find me on Twitter, tweet me, Facebook message me, all those other up-to-date ways of getting a hold of people in the 21st century. Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure. I can't talk about this enough. Maybe you've kind of said to yourself, yes, you are talking about it quite enough. Well, every week there's something big. May 5th through the 7th, 2017, Farmington, Pennsylvania. Steve Coles, Stan Gordon, Jay Baterchin, Rosemary Ellen Guiley, Ronald L. Murphy, John Sable, and myself, all of us speaking at that event. That's a pretty heavy lineup. This event is hosted by Eric Altman, very popular guy in Pennsylvania. I don't know. Some people don't like him. I don't know why. It's the ego thing, I guess. Well, this event is benefiting three local charities: Unity, A Journey of Hope, Lucky Paws Animal Rescue, and Fate, Friends of Animals. Very near and dear to my heart. Helping animals, saving animals, especially dogs, always weighs very heavy for me personally. I like helping out at these places. I haven't done it in a while for personal reasons, but lost our dog about a year and a half ago. So it's a pretty touchy subject, but I was very happy to give last year. We had a great time at the, we kind of got carried away last year at the charity auction, and I'm going to be donating a book or two or more, I don't know, for this year's charity event. And I'm going to bring some cash this time because I'm going to outbid a couple people on some cool stuff. It's a lot of fun. That's just the tip of the iceberg. There was an announcement earlier today, that something big will be announced soon. I don't even know. You wouldn't tell me. I begged him. Eric said, no, I can't tell anybody. So I don't know. I don't have any news, but something big. There's already a lot of other big things. Big contest. You can win a whole basket full of goodies if you just buy a ticket. I can't even tell you how many. There is all kinds of stuff. Posters from this year and last year. Bigfoot's crossing sign, which I won one of those, or I bought one of those at the charity auction last year. Awesome thing. Framed art from Jay Baterchin and Chum Bucket Studios. A replica copy of a Pennsylvania Bigfoot cast. T-shirts, videos, all kinds of stuff. All you got to do is get tickets for this event. It's going to be a fantastic time. Butch Witkowski is going to be in the house. I'll never do that again. In the house. Well, I did it anyway. Lon Strickler will also be on hand. Those two guys, they're just going to be hanging out in the crowd. And they're going to be talking. They're very knowledgeable guys. Lon is on the radio, Phantoms and Monsters, with his blog. And Butch, he just speaks for himself. Very knowledgeable guy about everything anomalous. I can go on and on. It's going to be a fantastic time. Workshops, speakers, campfire, charity auction, benefiting local charities. It's a lot of work. Eric's stressed already. Just buy some tickets. Make him happy. And if you don't show up, then just, you know, give me the ticket so I can try to win this huge basket of goodies. It's going to be a fun time. PABigfootCampingAdventure.com. Check it out. It will be intense, because we're going to be intense. You get it? We're sleeping in tents. I'm sleeping in a tent. You can stay at a motel. I won't laugh. Okay. And just today, I got an email from the St. Albans Sanatorium event that takes place May 19th through the 20th. Yeah, I get a week break. That's happening in Radford, Virginia. That, you know, I've been thinking so much of this PA Bigfoot Camping Adventure. I've kind of forgotten. I guess this is taking a back seat. But now that the speakers list has been announced, I mean, this is going to be great. St. Albans Sanatorium. It's a nice building, nice looking building. Some people say that's where I belong. I don't know what they mean by that, but well. we'll find out. It's going to be good to get back into one of these places. I haven't been to a haunted type, touristy type location in quite a while. But the speakers list is announced. This is going to be a Friday and Saturday event. I know it's kind of hard for people to get out there on Fridays. You know, the week, the whole week thing. You know, jobs, things. But I work on the weekends, so if I can get time off, you can get time off and come down there. Doors open at 10 o'clock a.m. on Friday, May 19th. Let's see. So I'll be setting up my table. We'll be hanging out and talking to people. It's going to be a fantastic time. A lot of people here. I can't even name it. Pat O'Keefe, Joe Chin, Scott Sukel. If you've never heard of Scott Sukel, he, man, he's an awesome guy. He was the tour director, essentially, for Mansfield Reformatory, my home away from home in the paranormal world. I've spent a lot of time there with very few people at times, but not as much as Scott. Scott has probably spent more time in Mansfield Reformatory than a lot of inmates have ever spent there. And he's done it a lot of times alone. I can't imagine that, but he's not crazy. Well, he's sort of crazy, but he's very, very down to earth, extremely knowledgeable. And he'll be speaking at that event. It'll be good to catch up with him that weekend. Christopher St. Booth will also be there. He's speaking right after I'm done. And I'm talking on Saturday, May 20th, from 3 to 4:30 p.m. And I have no idea what I'm even talking about. So, yeah, I'm prepared. Either way, it'll be entertaining. It'll be a lot of fun. And we're going to be doing a public investigation that night, 9 p.m. That's going to be a blast. All of us together, a lot of different backgrounds, from ghost hunters to Mansfield Reformatory to my experiences all over the United States. Yeah, it's going to be interesting, to say the least. It'll be a lot of fun. But if you're anywhere near Radford, Virginia, you're going to want to go to this. If tickets are $50. That's not that much. I saw you grimace. It's not that bad. You can pay with PayPal on the website. It's enigmacons.com. enigmacons.com. And I'm going to throw that in the chat room. Look out. Duck, here it comes. There it is. Speaking of Duck, hello, Duck. Jim Mallard, I see you. Enigmacons.com. It's going to be a great time. Again, I don't even know what the heck I'm speaking about, but you guys will hear about that first, whatever is going on. And also, don't forget about Ghost City Tours, who is sponsoring an overnight ghost hunt at the Andrew Jackson Hotel in New Orleans, Louisiana. You get a room for two. And you get to investigate. You also get to use their tools. And then you get to take home your audio recordings or your whatever else kind of information that you're going to gather. That's for April 24th and or Tuesday, April 25th. You can either go one night or two nights. I suggest, highly recommend two nights. That's an experience you won't forget to investigate in a small setting in a very historic location. Or October 11th and 12th, 2017. Again, that's in New Orleans, Louisiana. And you can visit ghostcitytours.com for more information on that. But we're headed to Phoenix, so pack your bags. We're going to talk a little bit of the Phoenix Lights incident. So yesterday, it was the 20th anniversary. I can't believe how time flies. I remember when this happened, and I remember some of these subsequent events that have happened since then. Yeah, so the 20th anniversary of the original sighting. There have been a couple since then, not as dramatic as the original. I mean, nothing is ever as good as the original. I mean, you're talking KFC, you're talking I don't know. Anyway, a little tea. Tea will come in later. You'll hear about tea. So March 13th, 1997, this event took place. It started in the evening time. You know, I don't remember when the time switched back in that time frame, but it was the evening time. And it started with a bunch of calls, phone calls, about a large triangular object that was slowly moving across the state. It actually started in Nevada, just south southeast of Las Vegas, very close to Las Vegas, and it moved its way into Arizona very slowly. And the event culminated in the sighting and filming of numerous lights that seemingly hung over the city for the entire world to see. And this is where Phoenix Lights, it gets a little murky. It gets a little confusing if you don't know too much about it. Even the event name itself, they call it the Phoenix Lights because it focuses on this final event of these lights hanging in the sky. This is where you see all these videos. There are some photographs of the original first event of this triangular object. Some of them, I think, are hoaxed. Imagine that. But these lights, it's very real. Lots of videos online. If you type in Phoenix Lights and if you go into YouTube, you'll see all kinds of videos, dozens of videos. In fact, even though the recording equipment left a little bit to be desired back in that time frame, we're not talking cell phones. We're not talking great equipment. We know we always complain. Well, all these things happen. Everyone has a phone, and nobody ever records anything. Well, here's a time frame where, if you can believe this, I know it's hard to believe, but 1997, not everybody had a cell phone. And even if you did, you probably didn't have a camera on it. So the technology really wasn't evolved at that time. I know, 20 years, it's hard to fathom that we didn't have Google on our phones back in this time frame, but we didn't. I know. Weird, isn't it? How do we get along? I don't know. How do we survive? Phone booths? I don't know. We just made it happen. Now, it got some local attention the morning after, the afternoon after, and the evening, especially 24 hours later. It was big news in the city of Phoenix. It got a little national news, but it was a couple of days later that the USA Today, I believe, ran an article, and it went ballistic. It was worldwide at that point. People were a little nervous in Phoenix, but it took, I think, about 4 or 5 months for the information to come out that it was more than likely flares dropped by the Air National Guard during training exercises at the Barry Goldwater Range at Luke Air Force Base, which is located just outside of the metro area of Phoenix. And we've seen, I think there was a light video earlier this year that was recorded from that area as well. Didn't quite get the traction of this story. Yeah, but it's really and truly the Phoenix Lights. It's kind of weird because I don't normally subscribe to the whole conspiracy theory kind of thing, but it's kind of interesting how the media has focused on this final event, knowing full well probably that there was an explanation for this. So I think the whole thing is a little bit of a weirdness to it because it's the original initial series of events that creates the reality that this might not be as explainable as people think. Now, like I mentioned, the sightings began outside of Las Vegas, southeast, in a city called Henderson, Nevada. Early witnesses described a large V-shaped or triangular object that was seen in the skies by a few witnesses who reported initially this event. And again, this is before Twitter. This is before Facebook and social media. These people weren't blogging about this initially or talking to each other. These were individual witnesses that called in, and this information was gathered later on about these time frames, and the time frames were all put together by organizations like MUFON, who did several investigations into this in several different areas all over Arizona, between Phoenix and Henderson, Nevada, putting all this information together. It took a lot longer than it does here and now because you don't have time stamps of social media discussions, but so they weren't feeding off of each other, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Now, the lights and object were then seen at various cities in northwest Arizona, and then it slowly moved its way down to Phoenix, where thousands witnessed these lights in the sky. And again, this before social media, no Twitter, no Facebook, just television media, and probably radio too, but I know it's hard to fathom, even for me, and I've grown up without this stuff. I grew up without cell phones and all these things, but it's still very hard to kind of fathom that something like this could happen in modern times without that kind of input from social media. Now, this is also a time that Comet Hale-Bopp was getting a lot of attention. I don't know if you remember Hale-Bopp. It was a little bit less famous than that Halley's Comet, but it was much more visible No, it was the biggest thing in astronomy since Halley's Comet, which was, I think, a decade prior to that, a little bit more than a decade, 1986, I think. So like 11 years. But Hale-Bopp was much more visible because Halley's Comet was on the other side of the sun. It just wasn't lined up good. We have to wait till, I think, 2061. It's on my calendar somewhere. Hopefully I'm able to see still. I'd like to see Halley's Comet one last time. But anyway, Comet Hale-Bopp. Yeah. If you remember this, there was a little bit of controversy about Hale-Bopp that is kind of UFO related that I'll spin off and talk about real quick, as long as I don't forget where I'm at here. Wikipedia page for Comet Hale-Bopp. Nancy Leader, a self-proclaimed contactee who claims to receive messages from aliens through an implant in her brain, stated that Hale-Bopp was a fiction designed to distract the population from the coming arrival of Nibiru, or Planet X, a giant planet whose close passage would disrupt the Earth's rotation, causing global cataclysm, unquote. Well, of course, that didn't happen. And the famous planet that does not exist has been expected to arrive pretty much every other week since. And it's not shown up yet. It's late. I don't know what's going on. But something else a bit startling that you might remember as well did happen in March of 1997 when 39 members of the cult Heaven's Gate committed suicide with the intention of teleporting to a spaceship that they believed was flying behind a comet. A lot of people were believing in this, but unfortunately Heaven's Gate took a little bit too far. And if you're wondering where that story came from, the power of radio. Yes, a caller called into, I guess I'll say the name of the show. I probably don't have to. You probably know where I'm going here. Coast to Coast. Somebody called in. This person misidentified a star in their computer program and thought it was just something else following this comet. And unfortunately, all these other people believed in this and led to 39 people committing mass suicide. Not good news. Well, the Phoenix Lights received a lot of media attention in the weeks after it happened. But it all pretty much dissolved when the military concluded that the lights were probably more than likely flares caused by A-10 warthogs flying through the National Guard. I think it was Maryland. Trying to remember. Yeah, Maryland, I think. Then governor of Arizona, Fife Symington. Now, he witnessed the solid object, but he didn't admit it publicly. He didn't say anything for about another decade because he didn't want to create panic within the city. Now, he would later describe the object as a delta-shaped solid object with distinctive leading edge and embedded lights. The governor was a pilot and a former Air Force officer, and he says he knows the object he saw was not flares. Now, facing a near-panic situation after the sighting, the governor attempted to lighten the mood by proclaiming that during a press conference that he had caught the perpetrator behind the Phoenix Lights. Well, he had dressed up as chief of staff in a Martian outfit and had handcuffs on his wrists, and then publicly announced to the media that the perpetrator of the lights had been caught. Well, it was meant to be funny, lighten the mood, but it kind of irritated some people, rubbed people the wrong way, a lot of witnesses and believers, and would kind of crumble any credibility about the sighting. It kind of deflated where the credibility of the sightings. And the governor, who was kind of, if you followed this stuff, he was kind of in between everything. He was pressuring the government for information. And this is a guy who later on would get in a little bit of trouble with the government, more ways than one, with the, Rocky Mountains National Park, when they had the government closures. He wanted to go in there and open it up, knocking on the doors, like, hey, we're going to open this thing. And the government said, get away. And it was a little tense situation. But in September of 1997, Symington was forced to resign his post as governor. Well, he was convicted of 21 federal counts of extortion, making false financial statements, and bank fraud, to top it off. Not good. Not good at all. Well, this conviction was later overturned, and Symington made his sighting public knowledge again about a decade after the incident, and has now become a public figure for the release of government knowledge of UFOs. Now, the original incident many times is separated by the secondary incident, described as flares, and it's thought to be nothing more than a group of airplanes flying in formation. That's the leading theory on this, but the timing doesn't really match up. There was no radar data to support this. It just seems weird to me. A lot of witnesses refute this. They've seen solid objects in the sky that blacked out stars. There was something physical up there, and it was not planes. A lot of people have said the same thing. But the Phoenix Lights returned 10 years later, February 2007, almost 10 years to the original event. Well, the lights were filmed by the local Fox News television station, and as you can understand here, it created a little bit of concern. However, Luke Air Force Base once again admitted that flares had been dropped, this time by F-16 jets. I guess they updated their arsenal there from the E-10s during training exercises once again. So somebody turned off the lights, and it wasn't as exciting. But the lights again returned the following year, April 2008, and this time the media went directly to Luke Air Force Base, and they said, hey, it wasn't us. We had nothing to do with it. So was this the real deal? No. On April 22nd, 2008, one day after the sighting, a resident of Phoenix reported that his neighbor had released flares attached to balloons as a prank. Well, he didn't think much of it at the time, but he wished that he had recorded it for proof. Now, you may say, well, that's all well and good, but it's hearsay, right? Well, the following day, the unidentified man admitted to releasing the flares. He'd attached to fishing line, attached to balloons, peeling them, released them in 15-minute increments, and it fooled a lot of people. Like I said, earlier this year, there was an event that showed up. Some college-aged kids were filming these flares over a hill, and it was pretty obvious what they were. It was a little too close, and it was much different than the original Phoenix lights. You can kind of tell the lights were different. And with that, we're going to go into our book of the week. I know that's weird. We usually save that to last. I know. Hang out with me. It's okay. We'll get through this together. So the book of the week this week, obviously, it's on the Phoenix Lights, and it's actually called The Phoenix Lights. Wow. How appropriate. Now, this is essentially the book on the Phoenix Lights. It's written by a person at the time was known as Dr. X, who had had her own experience with UFOs leading up to the Phoenix Lights incident of 1997. And this book really goes in depth in describing it. Now, she kind of hid her identity, so there was a little bit of question of credibility. So she eventually kind of came out, and her name is Lynn D. Kitai, and she's a medical doctor. Her husband is also a scientist. I don't remember what his background is, but they're both in the medical field, and they're both, they're both scientists. She's in the medical field. I don't remember what he does, to be honest, but she was a skeptic, but she had her own sightings of some weird things 2 years prior to the Phoenix Lights, that when the Phoenix Lights incident came out, she was not a witness to that event, but she had a lot of information that she shared. And it became just a really interesting story. And if you read this book, this book really talks about previous to that with her personal experiences. And then when everything hit the fan with the Phoenix Lights incident on March 13th and everything that surrounded it and happened after it. And it's a really good read. It's a really good book on the information that has happened during that event and post that event. Very, very documented very well, very chronicled very, very well in this book. And it's a little – it does say it's the Phoenix Lights, a skeptic's discovery that we are not alone. The explosive, never-before-told story of the largest UFO sighting in modern history. But there is a lot of believer kind of stuff in it, I have to admit, which kind of is a little bit distracting. But it does tell it like it is. I mean, it's – it's strange. It's really, it is an untold story, unknown story. There's so many tangibles to this. And despite the Air Force saying this and the Air Force saying that, no radar data for this. And then kind of saying, well, we had no planes in the sky. Then all of a sudden, oh, yeah, we forgot that the Maryland Air National Guard was in the area dropping flares. We forgot about that. Just kind of weird. And again, I'm not one for conspiracies, but to me, it seems like something was going on. Somebody knew about it. And we hurried up and dropped a bunch of flares to cover up for what was going on. So we had a cover story. I know it's hard for me to say. I don't normally kind of talk about that kind of stuff, but I really feel strongly that there's something unexplainable about that first incident of the Phoenix Lights. And this book is it's pretty chunky here. It's did I say chunky? Can you say chunky on the radio? I guess I did twice. 252 pages, a lot of information. The book I have is a 2010 updated edition. Originally came out, let's see, I think 2004. Actually, 2000 was updated 2004, and again in 2010. I am lucky; I have a autographed copy by Lynn Kitai. Great book, one of my favorite UFO incidents of all time, the Phoenix Lights. And again, the book is "The Phoenix Lights: A Skeptic's Discovery That We Are Not Alone" by Lynn D. Kitai, M.D. M.D. So with that, I'm going to pause here at the bottom of the hour and let you know that you're tuned into WCJV Digital Broadcasting from Youngstown, New York, emanating live at WCJVradio.com. And you're currently listening to the Paranormal News Insider with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. Well, I don't know where you were last night, but last night I was here. I was here, but I was there. I was in the chat room like you are. I hope you are. And I was listening to a show here on WCJV called Crypto Kid. Never heard of it. Where were you? You should have been here. It's a show, new show here on WCJV, hosted by Colin Schneider. Now, I've talked about him before on the Paranormal News Insider a couple times. I think even in the top 10 countdown last year. Well, he's an up-and-coming cryptozoologist. He's a young crypto kid. I mean, he's a kid. I mean, to me, he's a kid. He's a teenager, but he's very knowledgeable, very resourceful. And I've had the pleasure of talking to his class last year. Got to present at his school. And I've seen him at a couple of conventions, a couple of different places. And he's going to be speaking this year at the PA one of the events, I can't remember, in Pennsylvania, but he'll be down at the Kecksburg UFO Festival. Looking forward to that. And very knowledgeable kid. But yeah, he's got a show. So don't miss that. If you're into cryptozoology and a little bit of fringe stuff, fairies and things, interesting stuff, but he knows his stuff. He knows the legends and folklore by heart. He knows all these stories. He amazes me with the amount of knowledge that he has. And it's hard to wow me. So you might want to tune into this show every Monday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, right here on WCJVradio.com. And tomorrow night, not to, take all the steam away, but tomorrow night, wow, trifecta. Wednesday night, you can catch Paranormal Experienced with host Kat Hobson as she talks to Pam Berry, CEO and co-owner of the Gettysburg Ghost Exchange, as well as a paranormal investigator, Reiki master, and tarot card reader. Again, that's Pam Berry. She's going to be the guest tomorrow night. Paranormal Experienced with host Kat Hobson. And that's 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central. Again, right here, WCJVradio.com. And thanks for being here tonight, Tuesday night, for this Paranormal News Insider show. It's pretty good, I guess. It's okay. He does an all right job. So let's go to ghost news. This is an interesting story you probably didn't see. If you missed it, don't worry. It's not that big of a deal. Now, I got a Facebook message from Alex Matsuo. She's a paranormal investigator and founder of the Association of Paranormal Study, not to mention somebody that I've had the pleasure of working with out in the field. Now, she alerted me to a story about consciousness. She messaged me and said that she thought that I would get a kick out of this, that I'd be really interested and I would enjoy this little piece. And it's titled Quantum Theory Proves Consciousness Moves to Another Universe After Death. Wow. I was like, wow, really? It proves it. That should be interesting. Well, the article comes to us from earthchild.co.za. Okay. Well, I was on lunch at work and popped open my Facebook app, and Messenger popped up like a couple seconds later. And I haven't heard from Alex in a while. I mean, she's busy. I'm busy. We have our own things. And she said she thought of me when she read this article. So I was like, uh-oh. Somebody, what did somebody do now? So my interest is piqued, and I read through the article and got a couple of chuckles. I think I choked on my sandwich once or twice. Now, the article focuses on creating a convincing statement that consciousness exists outside of the body and is what makes up the material universe in a hypothesis known as biocentrism. Biocentrism. Look it up. You don't believe me? It's out there. And it is out there. This essentially means that consciousness is not something that dies with the body and is something that exists in multiple universes and beyond the laws of physics. Now, yes, I have a degree in metaphysics. So as a metaphysician, we kind of embrace this thought. And it's not something I completely disagree with or don't think is possible. Just certain ways that it's presented are a little bit more difficult to grasp than other ways. And biocentrism, it's a little hard to grasp in the reality aspect. I think we're all connected in some way, but to say that we're just this artificial vessel, I don't know. I don't want to go down that road. But the article itself is based on the book Biocentrism, How Life and Consciousness Are the Keys to Understanding the Nature of the Universe, written by Dr. Robert Lanza. Again, don't get me wrong. I'd love to believe that this individual story is true. It's a romantic notion to believe that when we die, it's not just lights out and there is nothingness. I mean, nobody wants to talk about that. Nobody. I mean, that's why we have religion. That's why we have a lot of things we do in life to kind of distract us from the thought of death. I mean, concentrating on it is probably one of the hardest things to do, to think about it, to process what happens. So ideas like this are born to create the hope that this is, you know, this more than likely scenario just isn't true. And it's just one of those things that we just don't have the ability to grasp. You know, thinking of the enormity of the galaxy, of the universe, is another concept that the human mind just can't wrap itself around. Or I should say the brain can't wrap itself around. But again, I do have feelings that this is partially true. But to come out and say that this is proven, that's a little premature. It's a little jumping the gun. Researcher and skeptic Kenny Biddle, and I read the Facebook post, and it was posted by Ghost Group. And Kenny was the first person to respond to this. He's a skeptic. Yeah, but he's a very down-to-earth skeptic. And I've had the pleasure of meeting him out in was at the PA Bigfoot Camping Adventure last year, and he'll be there this year. Now, this paranormal group, they were called the Ghost Guild. Now, they shared this blog post. They're a fairly new group, so you kind of got to forgive them for a little faux pas of proclaiming truth without anything to back it up. Well, Kenny began his post by saying that the title of the blog post is misleading. It's just a hook to get someone to click on it, which is true. I mean, it is 2017. A lot of stories are like that. Quantum physicists would have published such findings in a scientific journal if this were true, not just wrote a book essentially by one author. I mean, at least would have been multiple authors. But Kenny also points out that this article is essentially copied from another blog article with the same title, which they do list as a resource, but it's essentially the same exact thing. And the blog is from Anna LaMind, and her blog titled Learning Mind. Now, on Learning Mind, there's a blog policy that states in part, quote, all content provided on this blog is for informational purposes only. The owner of this blog makes no representations as to the accuracy or completeness of any information on this site or found by following any link on this site. The owner will not be liable for any errors or omissions in this information, nor for the availability of this information. The owner will not be liable for any losses, injuries, or damages from the display or use of this information. The owner does not claim that the information provided in the articles of this blog is the absolute truth, but, on the contrary, is only a presentation of different opinions and theories, unquote. I obviously emphasize that last sentence for a reason. So while this blog makes the statement, it should be noted that it is merely the opinion, and the headline is a bit misleading in this claim. It's just an opinion. It's not a fact. Nobody backed it up. Well, that would be headline news if that were true. It would also prove what consciousness is, which is one of the still many big challenges of trying to figure this chunk of flesh that we all walk around with, that how it works. It's the biggest, one of the biggest, probably the biggest question, next to what happens when we die. So those two things are kind of intertwined. Now, this is kind of a style of writing for modern, you call it what, clickbait, I guess. Now, Kenny Biddle, again, he's a very down-to-earth guy, very skeptical, but he's, you know, if you can prove to him certain things. I've had discussions with him about Bigfoot things, and you know, I'm kind of the same way he is. I'm in the middle of the road. I'm not a big fan of beating trees with sticks and screaming in the woods. But, you know, there's some other things that we had nice discussions about. But Kenny, he tells it how it is and how he feels, and he pulls no punches. And again, he's going to be at the PA Bigfoot Camping Adventure this year. So if you want to meet him, hang out with him. And he's a big geek too. He likes comic book stuff and all that fun stuff. So come on out. Let me I got a link here. I'm going to throw this link in the chat room. If you're in the chat room, sometimes when I remember, if I'm not going too fast, I throw some links out there in the chat room for everybody who's hanging out in there, causing havoc. Usually Dita's the ringleader. So be careful of her when you see her. You can get these links like pretty much right away after the story, or sometimes before the story. Sometimes I share pictures and different things about these stories in the chat room, and you can get that information a little quicker than what you would. Because during the week, I throw stuff out on Facebook. I throw stuff on Twitter. It's actually combined, but it just sounds cooler. And you'll get that information throughout the week. But if you're live, you get it pretty much instantaneously. You don't have to wait for all my daily posts of the Paranormal News Insider. But anyway, on the heels of this story, there's a little bit bigger of a story out there that made a little bit of, I don't know if you call it headline news, but paranormal headline news. And if, again, it falls on the heels of the last one, literally. And well, I guess literally. Well, this one comes to us from Mysterious Universe. And the story is titled, Doctors Report Cases of Anomalous Brain Activity After Death. Wow. So essentially, doctors in Canada noted brain activity of patients before, during, and after death, and were able to note brain activity in patients up to 10 minutes after the death of the body. The claim here is that this proves consciousness exists after the death of the body. That's a huge leap to go from brain activity to proving consciousness, I thought, but that's what the article says. I'm just interpreting what I'm reading here. While this is a scientific study, the scientist involved has said that this is an extremely small sample size and not necessarily validating anything. Well, I guess the people that wrote the thing didn't read it. I read it. Now, the brain waves observed in patients who died resembled waves observed during the sleep state of the body. I mean, does this mean that it's consciousness? We should all know that when a person dies, it's not instant. You just, it's not like a light switch. The lights go out and everything's done. It's over. I mean, people, obviously we have our different beliefs about that, but looking at it from a scientific standpoint or a physiological standpoint, it's not just one event. Now, different parts of the body cease functioning at different times and essentially dies at different rates. And the brain can continue for a few minutes after death. And scientifically speaking, again, it's essentially the burning off of electrical impulses and probably not high-level thinking. It depends on what happened with the body and how the body dies. Obviously, a severe trauma of the body or the head would cause the brain to shut off a little quicker. An event like a stroke or a heart attack might also make the brain shut down a little quicker than normal. But just a natural death, you know, the kidneys or other vital organs giving out, you know, your brain's going to last a little longer. Gives you hope, I guess. I don't know. But the brain can continue for a few minutes after death. They know that. Scientists already know that. It's usually about 3 to 5 minutes. So 10 is a stretch. But again, this is a small sample size. I mean, it's more than likely not high-level thinking, like I said. Consciousness transiting to another location. Now, when looking at the chunk of material that's in our skull, we have to realize there's two things going on up there. For some people, it's less than two. But one thing is the brain. Now, that's the jumbled, twisted chunk of mush, mostly water, that brain thing. That chunk of gray matter, I guess they call it. Now, that carries electrical impulses. It houses remnants of prior impulses, such as memories, faces of people and names, places like our bank account number, and just a bunch of information. It's just stored as impulses, electrical pieces of information. And it carries out the functions of the overall chunk of tissue surrounding it, the body. Keeping our heart going, the blood circulating, letting us know when we feel pain so we can take our hand off the burner on the stove or the pitchfork out of our toe, whatever else had just happened, and we could seek medical attention. Well, the other thing, other than the brain, is the mind. Now, the mind is this magical thing. It has the magical ability of whatever it is that seemingly powers the brain. We don't know what that is. Some people call it an essence. Other people call it a soul, a consciousness. There's literally a dozen or probably more names to whatever this magical electrical thing that stimulates our body to allow this higher functioning to occur. You could call it a mystical force that powers the brain and gives us the ability to think, rationalize, and be aware of ourselves, which is very rare for any animal to have that personal self-awareness. That's what separates us from a lot of other creatures, a lot of other animals. Being aware of ourselves and the world around us, other than, you know, running because we're being chased by something that we're going to die from. Now, just like death, it's weird. I sat around and tried to think about this yesterday. It's hard to rationalize what it takes to be aware, if that makes any sense, and how this works. You know, it's like looking at something like, how do I know that this is hot when I feel it? It feels warm. Like, how do I know this? And how do I know that I know this? It's a conundrum. It's weird. Don't do that now because I got a couple minutes left here. Don't get distracted. But it's just funny. I don't know. It's really silly to explain things that we don't understand. Sometimes people make things that are a little bit, I guess, out there because we can't rationalize, we can't think, we can't explain it. It's no idea. It's okay not to know. Don't make things a little more complicated than they are. This was just a scientific experiment that was looking at that. It didn't prove anything. And the scientists were very careful with this to come out and say, this is a very small sample size. This was like one person. We found brain waves up to 10 minutes. Let's not get carried away. Now back to the mind. The mind is essentially the power of the brain. The issue is that scientists don't quite understand how it is that the mind works. I mean, we know the batteries get their power from food that we take in. It's converted into energy, but we don't know how, beyond that, how it goes from the energy creation to understanding pain, emotion, awareness, all those things. We don't know how that works. Nobody knows. It's a big question. So we just talked about two of the biggest questions in life back to back. My brain hurts. I don't know about yours. I mean, I don't understand how it works. I don't know. I wish I knew. And I've read a lot of weird things about that. And let me get the link here. But you can't just read one thing, one study, and just assume or jump to the conclusion that it explains everything, because it doesn't work that way. Scientists, or I should say science, is a process. It doesn't work in a one-off, one experiment. Now other people will take this work and try to replicate it and see how they get their same information or not. That's the process. It's a process. So other news. Let's talk something a little bit more simple here. Crop circles. Well, scientists say, well, they're real. Yeah, well, they're real, of course, because they're knocking down crops and costing farmers money. But not only that, they contain hidden messages. Well, a scientist says this. Well, that's the headline to a story published by news.com.au, which means it's an Australian online newspaper. Now, the piece is dated March 12, 2017, and it focuses on 61-year-old Horace Drew, who had a sighting of a UFO as a child in Jacksonville, Florida. I think that's really all you need to know about this story. Now, he's grown up to be a believer in UFOs and extraterrestrials. And he says, I saw a UFO, so I knew they were real from a very early age. Well, that belief in UFOs and aliens has also led the molecular biologist with a PhD in chemistry from Caltech to go on to research crop circles. So, you know, as a kid, he sees something he can't explain, and it's really spurred him to, I guess, get sidetracked from his I don't know if it had anything to do with him becoming a scientist or not, but kind of weird to have this focus of being a chemist and a biologist, and you're out there researching crop circles. While he now lives in Australia, he studies crop circle formations and UFO sightings in Europe and all over the world. Now, Dr. Drew, no, not that Dr. Drew. I didn't even want to say Dr. Drew, but now he believes that crop circles are made either from aliens or from humans, but not the way you think. Not like planks and rope, but he thinks these humans have traveled back in time. Now, if that's not strange, Drew has two theories about crop circles. On one hand, he feels aliens are using complex codes hidden within crop circles to communicate with us. He explains, quote, one theory is that they are trying to introduce themselves to us peacefully, like we do using bubbles with dolphins. Bubbles with dolphins. When humans want to talk with dolphins, we put little bubble circles under the ocean with the generator. We watch the dolphins come up and play and investigate, and we study them. Barack or Trump has never said to a dolphin, take me to your leader. I want to sign a treaty with you. And the extraterrestrials are not interested in making a treaty with us. They are ahead of us like we are ahead of the dolphins and the whales, unquote. And I stress, unquote. I'm not saying that. Well, I am saying it, but he said it first. Wow. That's a lot to process. Well, let me just leave that right there for a second. Now, on the other hand, Drew feels that these crop circles are merely signposts or markers for future time travelers. I come back to the past. Let's see if he can explain this one. Well, he says, quote, there are definitely humans living there in about 5,000 years with time travel capability. I don't know where you get 5,000 years from. But back to the quote. They're coming back and flying all over Earth. They just seem to say this is a certain day and mark it. So the trouble is we don't know space-time physics enough to understand what's happening. It's beyond our knowledge. Maybe they don't want us to know about it. It might just be for them, unquote. I don't know about you, but I'm a little lost with this guy. I mean, two outstanding theories, I guess, and they are credible within the crop circle field. People do think that these could be time travelers or interdimensional creatures or aliens or what have you. But wow, just wow. Now, a super advanced group of people are able to time travel and come back to the 1980s through the present and leave clues of their presence in the way of crop circles. I think he's been investigating a whole different type of crop circle, to be honest with you. But Dr. Drew is a conspiracy theorist whose childhood memory seemingly sparked him to look into these wonderful mysteries. But I mean, that's, some of this stuff is I think it's a little too out there. I mean, I get it. It's a little weird. Yeah, he's got some theories on the messages there. He just thinks that they're complex stuff. I didn't even get into that because I was just so blown away by his theories here. But yeah, he thinks that these messages spell out different things to us, and that they're telling us about what we're doing wrong and how we can come together. It's the same thing that we heard in the 60s. So anyway, one last story here. Good thing I don't think he's here. Let me check. Is Frank in there? Good. Frank's not here. That's good. And I say that's good because I'm about to bash something that he loves dearly. And that's coffee. Sorry, Frank. As I sip my tea, not a fan of coffee. Yes, I'm drinking yerba mate tea. I typically drink green tea. But back to coffee. I never understood, and I've always questioned this. And I've been to Seattle, so I've seen some of the early Starbucks buildings. Why does Starbucks have a logo that features a siren? Well, it's a mermaid, but it's technically a siren. A Greek mythology, sirens, who are basically mermaids, lured sailors close to rocky shorelines, playing music and singing, and just, you know, bobbing in the water, and people wondering, these sailors wondering what this is, and getting a little too close to shore, and they wreck their ships and they die. That's what they do. That's all they do. They just hang out on the shoreline and wreck ships. That's their MO. Now, a story recently surfaced about a purported mermaid that grabbed two boys and subsequently drowned them in Zimbabwe. That's in Africa. Now, the purported incident occurred on February 19th near a dam where two boys were grabbed and held underwater, yet they were released and came to the surface. Now, one of the parents began crying, and the mermaid came back and pulled the two boys underwater, sadly and unfortunately this time, for good. Apparently, according to the rules, one cannot cry when someone is attacked by a mermaid, as this can lead to bad things. Now, I looked on Amazon, and I didn't find this book anywhere on mermaid do's and don'ts. But apparently there's some kind of rule book out there that you can't cry during an attack, or they'll finish the job, I guess. I don't know. Wacky. Now, the same area, Gakwe in Zimbabwe, experienced strange occurrences in 2012 when workers stated mermaids were tampering with their equipment and their work. Now, that's according to Mysterious Universe. Now, workers were said to be just disappearing, and many had witnessed the beings and ultimately refused to go back to work there. Now, did mermaids really drown these young boys? Probably not. But due to the location of the story, it's kind of hard to get accurate information about certain stories. I did try this is actually from a local newspaper, and it's just a story, but it's hard to tell whether or not this is like an editorial, or it's really based on the drowning of two young boys. And this is the cover story, the thought behind the story, sadly, that a mermaid was behind this, or maybe there is a mermaid behind this, who knows. But with only one mention in one newspaper in this area, I would have to lend towards fake news. But it's still very interesting and weird. But I guess in Zimbabwe, mermaids are still feared and revered and thought of as real creatures. I don't know if they saw that documentary on the History Channel or not. Maybe that fooled them. I don't know. But still a sad situation if two young boys did drown in a dam area. But mermaids? It's 2017. But I don't know. It's, who am I to mock their beliefs? Maybe they do have something going on there. Maybe there's a creature, an animal in the water that's doing something. I don't know. That's spooky stuff. And I think, did I put the No, I didn't. Let me throw that last link there in the chat room for you guys. And you can click on that, save it for later. I don't know. And you can read about, oh, wait, that's the hidden messages one. I'm sorry. Well, anyway, that's pretty much what we have here. Let's go. Well, we'll go the original story. There is two stories here, two links. One story is from the 2012 incident. I'm going to put the new one in first into the chat room. And appreciate everybody for hanging out in the chat room tonight, getting these links in there for all these wacky, zany, wonderful, weird stories and interesting stuff with the Phoenix Lights tonight. I was really kind of excited about that. I kind of wish I was on Monday nights just for this event, but it's not too far removed. It's only a day away from this the Phoenix Lights events. And I've had this book for a little while. Saving it for tonight. So again, tonight is one night removed from the 20th anniversary of the Phoenix Lights incident. Kind of just mind-boggling to think about that. I remember when it happened. Just kind of young and fresh in the paranormal as a researcher and investigator, but very large story. And historically speaking, should go down as one of the biggest events, if you were alive, of our time. So look more of it up. I believe I've already posted some stuff on the Paranormal News Insider Facebook page. There is a documentary that you can watch that is based on this book, the book of the week, The Phoenix Lights, A Skeptic's Discovery That We Are Not Alone. Essentially, it follows the book, and it's really, really interesting. It has a lot of interviews with some people that have commented on this book, including Edgar Mitchell, who makes an appearance in there as well. So great information in that documentary. If you're not a big reader, you don't like to read, you can watch it. It's on YouTube. And if I haven't put the link, I'll be sure to put the link out there pretty quickly. So you can get a little bit more information about the Phoenix Lights and read about Lynn D. Kitai's experience with yeah, actually, here it is. I'm going to throw that link in the chat room. If you guys want to devour that, if you got the time for that, there it is. You can save that for later. Great documentary on that. And with that being said, I don't know what's in store next week. I have no idea. The news has not yet been written for what we're going to talk about next week. That's the exciting part for me, anyway. I have no idea what's coming in the next week. Who knows? So tune in next Tuesday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, right here on WCJVradio.com. And keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.
You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
precious I can't understand.
Are you reeling in?